Okay, great. It's nice to be here today. So what I'm going to be talking about is online political organizing with the Howard Dean for America campaign. And what we're going to be talking about is lessons learned from this digital campaign. So this is what I did. I spent 3 months working at the Dean for America campaign, the national headquarters in Burlington, Vermont, from November of 2003 to February 2004. Now, I did do work with the web team, and so I did some work with the blog, and I did some work with some competitive analysis of websites and putting up content. But my primary function at this campaign was to be an embedded researcher. So what I was trying to do at the Dean campaign was sort of try to make sense for the computer science community as to what the Dean campaign was doing with their online organizing efforts. In the middle of the summer to early fall of 2003, it became pretty obvious that the Dean campaign was doing some pretty amazing things with online political organizing. Online organizing being an area that I'd been interested in and been active in for a very long time, and it was tremendously empowering and interesting to see what they were doing at the national presidential level. So my advisor, Dr. Barney Nardi, sent me up to the Burlington headquarters to do this thesis research. As I said, I volunteered and I worked with what was called web team, which was pretty much about a 25-person group which managed all online efforts within the campaign. They did the programming, the internal programming, the administration, the writing on the blog, the mass emails. Basically, anything online communication came from this web team. Only 25 people. So this is sort of a view of traditional campaigning. You have your candidate out with the people, signing autographs, doing what the candidates do, taking pictures with babies, kissing babies, and whatnot. And this is sort of a more, probably an image that we here in this room are a little bit more familiar with, which is sort of the online campaigning look at a campaign. But basically, it's just a view into a bunch of cubicles, and you got a whole bunch of geeks hunched over their terminals doing what geeks do best, which is get content online and organize people online. And this is what the Dean for America campaign headquarters looked like. This is where all the magic happened. So the Dean for America campaign, for those of you who don't remember it or don't know about it, Howard Dean was a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. And he ran his campaign from January of 2003 to February 2004. So I'm saying approximately 13 months. It gets a little bit fuzzy. The math gets a little bit fuzzy because Howard Dean wasn't officially running until June, but he had expressed interest and was starting to assemble a web team assembling a group of people to launch his presidential aspirations in January 2003. So a lot of people have said, and I would agree, that this was the first internet political campaign. And why do we say that this was the first internet campaign? Certainly, previous campaigns have had online presences. They have had Gore, certainly had a website in 2000. Bush had a website in 2000. And John McCain actually had a website. And other campaigns have actually used the tools of the internet to get information about their candidate out there. But what I'm talking about here is a little bit beyond just using the internet. So what has happened before is that in contrast to previous campaigns, the Howard Dean for America campaign was less about creating an online presence, such as a brochure or website, and it's more about creating an online social movement using online networking tools. And the tools that were used primarily were the blogs, the meetups, email lists, etc., and I'll be talking about these later. One of the big facets and seems to be the key for the Howard Dean for President campaign is that not only did it create this online social movement and allow these tools to allow people to connect up out there in the web sphere together, they actually open up control of the message. They actually invited people into the campaign and really wanted them to take part in the campaign in a meaningful way, not just simply to send in their money, which they also wanted as well, But to do whatever they felt was necessary to get Howard Dean the Democratic nomination, and to do innovative and creative things on the internet that would further their goals. So they trusted and accepted, and they expected their supporters to craft the movement in their own image. And that actually happened to a huge degree during the campaign. Backing up a little bit, how did it become the internet campaign? Well, the very short answer to that question is Joe Trippi. Now, Joe Trippi was Howard Dean's campaign manager, and he was a veteran of the 90s-era dot-com ventures, and he had this idea. When he first came to the campaign, he wanted to run an open-source campaign, and he advocated a, quote-unquote, netroots orientation to the campaign. He believed in the power of the web. He believed in the power of the people on the internet, and he believed in the power of opening up the conversation and the message. And this is in stark contrast to most political types and most political campaigns, which really want to make sure that they shut down the message and that the message that's being repeated by each supporter is exactly the message that was given to them, handed to them on high by the officials at the national headquarters. So I sort of liken this is sort of the test of the cathedral and the bazaar concept in national politics. I don't actually know whether Joe Trippi has read Cathedral and the Bazaar, but it seemed very, very appropriate and very well encapsulated the feeling that I got while I was in the campaign and what it felt like we were trying to do. So when Joe Trippi arrived in the campaign about January 2003, and he, of course, came in having these ideas and wanting to have an internet campaign, but not necessarily being able to connect that, and not necessarily being able to convince a lot of the political types that the internet, what's this internet thing? You know, you have a traditional campaign. A traditional campaign has field organizers. Those field organizers go out and rally troops, and that's sort of the traditional mode of organizing. And Joe Trippi is sort of turning this on his ear. So, one thing that happened that really solidified a belief within the campaign that this was going to be successful was this online landmark. So April 26, 2003 was the third year anniversary of Governor Dean signing the Civil Unions Bill into law in Vermont, and that accords same-sex couples the same rights and privileges as marriage in the state of Vermont. And 1 week before, a Republican Senator Santorum, made some anti-gay remarks before the Associated Press, equating homosexuality with bigamy, incest, and adultery. Now, this was met with immediate condemnation from a lot of Democratic leaders, but also the Dean campaign sent out an email petition that was sent out to their email list. At that point, it was very, very small. In January 2003, they started with 432 people on their list, and it wasn't too much more than that at this point. They sent this petition out to people and asked them to sign the petition to condemn the remarks and ask for Senator Santorum's resignation. He was the chairman of the Republican Senatorial Caucus. And to contribute to the campaign and add into their whole dollar amounts, add 26 cents to show the campaign that this is why they were contributing to the campaign. So at that point, in the 3 days following this email petition, this one email petition that was sent out, they received 12,000 signers to the email petition and concomitantly increased Dean's email list a tremendous amount. They also raised $25,000 in the 3 days following the email, at a time when they were averaging contributions around $2,000 a day. So they would have otherwise received about $6,000. So this event secured within the campaign and to all the campaign staff and people who came on afterwards, it secured a deep and enduring belief within the campaign that online efforts could do the twin goals and could be successful at matching the twin goals of the campaign, which is to attract supporters and to raise funds. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the tools, since this is a systems administration conference, and people might want to know sort of what was actually used at the Dean for America campaign. The website was a commercial content management system called Combio, which was run by Combio. It was contracted out. We also used an open source alternative called Bricolage. And some of you in this room might actually have some facility with Bricolage. It's a nice commercial, nice open source adjunct to Cambio. So the contribution engine was run on Cambio, and they also programmed an internal engine to be able to handle contributions if Cambio got overloaded. One of the big things for any national political campaign, when you get to the numbers that we're talking about, 600,000, 700,000 people on an email list, you need a really robust mass email engine. It's different from spam engines, but you do need to be able to contact your supporters in a relatively short period of time. You can't go with regular email solutions, which might spit out 1,000 or 2,000 emails per hour. You actually need ones that are going to spit out 300,000 to 400,000 emails per hour. So for a mass email engine, we both use Cambio and Lyris, which is another commercial email solution. Now, these, I think, are a little bit more interesting, at least to me. These are the online organizing tools. The blog was originally run on Blogger, and then it moved in June to movable type. So it was hosted externally at deancalltoaction.blogspot.com, or I forget the URL. But then it was internalized in June of 2003 at blogforamerica.com. And meetup.com is another terribly integral part of the puzzle of online organizing. So what Meetup does is allowed Dean supporters to get together once per month, the first Wednesday of every month, and to meet people in their local community who were also interested in supporting Howard Dean for the presidency. This is one of the things. In the absence, the Dean campaign didn't have the funds to be able to send out field organizers to every location, and this was one of the reasons that they turned to the Internet in the first place. They didn't have a lot of money when they were starting out, and they didn't have a lot of visibility. So what Meetup allowed them to do was to be able to have a very low-cost, extremely low-cost solution, where local supporters could just register on this website, decide where they were going to meet up, and go ahead and meet up. And all the campaign had to do was basically set the agenda for the meetings, give the people who were leading the meetings the materials that they need for that month, and then they could run their meeting very effectively. So in terms of level of effort, I always think this is a really interesting one. For to run approximately 1,000 to 1,200 meetups per month, they only had one dedicated staff person to do that. And what that dedicated staff person did was set the agendas, Xeroxed a whole bunch of, 1,000 to 1,200, agendas and email and items, and was sent those out to all the organizers, and then had a conference call the day before the meetup so that all conference organizers, all the meetup organizers knew what they were supposed to be doing for that month. So it was a tremendously effective method of what the campaigns called connecting the ends. So most of what the Dean campaign did was virtual, was basically online, but they needed a way to get people connected in the real world so that they actually could have sort of high-touch solutions so they could actually connect with other voters in their local area. There was two other tools that were online organizing tools, one of which was DeanLink and the other one was GetLocal. And DeanLink is a Friendster-inspired, Dean-themed organizing tool. So basically, you can go there and register, you can put up your bio, you can say, I'm interested in organizing house party, I'm interested in flyering for Dean, I'm interested in doing, whatever you're interested in doing. And then you could connect up with other local supporters, people in your area, and send them messages and say, hey, I was going to go and hold up a Dean sign at the corner of, First and Main on Saturday, would you like to come? GetLocal was another tool that allowed you to do that. So in contrast to meetup.com, which was set up to only have meetups once per month, GetLocal allowed people to register their events, and it could be any type of event that you wanted, a social event, a debate watching party, a C-SPAN watching party if Dean was going to be on C-SPAN, an ice cream social, a house party, any other activity that that volunteers wanted to initiate on behalf of the campaign. then the other part of the huge part of the online organizing world that came into the Dean campaign was the thousands of creative supporter generated campaign materials and events. Now, supporters and volunteers generated hundreds of websites, email groups. They created postcard utilities, flyering utilities. They ran their own meetups. They held ice cream socials. They did house parties. They did victory day parties. They canvassed. They did debate watching parties, etc. The list could pretty much be increased ad infinitum. So this is sort of just a collage of some of the websites that were created on behalf of the Dean candidacy. You can see Scientists for Deans. One of the things that I always think is very interesting, if you see in the top right-hand corner, that says Punks for Democracy Now!, but it used to say Punks for Dean. And this is, Punks for Dean actually turned out to be a fairly integral community site for people to go to. It was a site put up by one punk, forget exactly where, and that person put a lot of, you know, emphasis and effort into the organization of their site and drew a lot of people into the campaign. And this is in contrast to, say, George W. Bush's campaign or even John Kerry's campaign, where the campaign wasn't vetting this content and was not worried that Punks for Dean was going to sully their message or sully the image of the campaign. They trusted that the Punks for Dean people were going to conduct themselves with, you know, in an appropriate manner and do things that were very effective for the campaign, and they actually really did. They got a huge number of people signed up, and they got a lot of people organized as well. Christians for Dean, Jews for Dean, Veterans for Dean, Arab Americans for Dean, Asian Pacific Americans for Dean, Dean Nation, Dean Defense League, Archives of Dean. There was over 700 websites in support of this candidacy, and this is just a few of them. This is also user-created content. I always think these are really interesting. This is a postcard utility that was created by one of our supporters that was posted after a negative attack ad was launched against Howard Dean towards the end of the campaign, which described Dean supporters as tax hiking, government expanding, latte drinking, sushi eating, Volvo driving, New York Times reading, body piercing, Hollywood loving, left-wing freak shows. So within hours, literally within hours, somebody had programmed and posted this postcard utility that allowed Dean supporters to make up their own little taglines as to what Dean supporters were all about. For instance, this one woman put up here, she's a dog-walking, Subaru-driving, Pacific Northwest living Dean supporter. And this one, which I always think is very cute. So this little kid is a sand-digging, Bob the Builder-loving, swimsuit-shedding, deficit-inheriting, child of two hardworking, tax-paying Dean supporters. And encourages people to check out Howard Dean. This is another website that was created by Dean supporters. This is Switch to Dean. This is mimicking a popular Switch to Macintosh ads that were on at that time. This is about December of 2003. And what they did was they went and they got Dean supporters at meetups and filmed them.
And right now, I'm an independent.
Oops.
When all the other Democrats were laying around like, oh, I'm so afraid of Bush, I can't do anything at all, Howard Dean came out and said he was against going to war with Iraq. I've never been involved in a presidential campaign before. I like this guy. He's got cojones, can you say that? My friends call me Max. I'm a claims adjuster, and I'm taking back my country.
And one more.
I've been a lifelong Republican, voted for Bush last election. The mighty shall rule the world irrespective of the concerns and interests of anybody else. The spread between the have and the have-nots in this country is getting greater. Howard Dean impresses me as a person that combines leadership as well as compassion. I'm Phil. I'm an engineer. I own my own consulting business. I'm a lifelong Republican, and I'm switching to Howard Dean.
See, as you can see, the campaign, these were just supporters who... These are just supporters who saw what they wanted to do. Get under the hood. I have hit F5. Control delete. Yeah. Maybe just have to go along with that. Switch to Mac. That's the one. I can just go. There you go. Yeah. I'm going to get to see my notes. So as you can see, the campaign had a lot of very innovative campaign materials that were created specifically by Dean supporters without any oversight from the Dean campaign itself. So this is a view of the blog. It's now getting a little bit small, so you may not be able to see it as well. But the blog was, what the blog provided was up-to-the-minute articles and discussion of campaign activities. The blog was located at blogforamerica.com, and it became a central online interactive community for the campaign. So what the blog offered to supporters was not only campaign information. And it really, the campaign information was not really very specific information that was tightly controlled. It wasn't all press releases. A lot of it was just pretty much stories, stuff that was going on with the meetups, stuff that was going on with the campaign organizers, stuff that was going on with supporters who were out in the field doing volunteer efforts. And those would be the stories. And that provided the constantly running narrative of what was going on at the Howard Dean for America campaign, and provided extremely compelling reading for a lot of people within the community. Now, the outside part of that was that people were allowed to comment on the blogs, just like most blogs allow their comment facilities. But a lot of blogs will. A one-person blog usually has maybe 3 to 5 comments on every single posting, and maybe over a day or two, whereas Blog for America was receiving on the order of 600 to 700 comments on each blog post, and that would be almost every 2 hours that there would be a new blog post. So we were getting a huge amount of traffic and getting a lot of people who were very interested in the campaign and wanted to comment on every one of the stories that was posted. So like I said, it became a central online interactive community for the campaign. During the period of October 15th to February 4th, they received an average of 2,722 independent blog comments per day. And on high days, that number got over 6,000. Over the lifetime of the campaign, we had approximately 35,000 people who commented on the blog, and the lifetime of the blog was approximately 9 months. Make it small. Just move the stuff.
Okay, maybe not.
I have a Mac, I'm sure I'll have.
So the blog received a whole bunch of people coming in and checking it out. As you can see, in May of 2003, it was about 1,000 or 2,000 people reading the blog per day. This is when it first got started. By July, there were about 20,000 people checking it out per day. September, that went up to 40,000, and by the very height of the campaign, there were between 90 and 120,000 people checking out the blog on average every single day. So the concept and the key element here in the Dean for America campaign was that they opened up the dialogue for the campaign. They didn't tell the supporters exactly what to say and what to do. They gave them suggestions, but they expected them to do things autonomously and to craft the message and craft the movement in their own image. The campaign didn't control the message. In fact, the message of the campaign was that you have the power. And that sounds like a cliche, and it maybe was an often used phrase in the campaign, but it really was the ethos of the campaign. They really wanted people that were external to the campaign to have as much stake in what went on in the campaign as the people who were sitting in the Burlington headquarters. They encouraged the creation of independent and autonomous content, and they freely linked to independent websites without vetting their content at all. In some part, that was practical matter because websites were being created and email lists were being created, and a lot of this content was being created too fast for the campaign to keep up with, for certain. But they wanted to, in this spirit of interactivity, in this spirit of opening up the campaign, they wanted to link to independent websites such as Punks for Dean. There was never an egregiously wrong website like, you know, racially motivated Skinheads for Dean or something. And that probably would have been a real touching one if it ever came up, but the concept was that they wanted to open up the content to freely link it to any independent websites that were created. They also encouraged the creation of independent email communities without any oversight, and a lot of the email communities that were created were independent constituency groups like Women for Dean, African Americans for Dean, Asian Pacific Islanders for Deans, Latinos for Dean, Scientists for Dean, Arab Americans for Dean. You saw some of them before. Or local areas that needed a smaller email list so that they could get their, like Kern County for Dean, so that they could get their volunteer efforts off the ground in a more timely fashion. Just an example of how open they are, the blog roll, and so a blog roll is usually just a link on a blog of usually about 10 to 13, 15, maybe 15 sites that the person who's creating the blog thinks that a person who's coming to the blog might be interested in as well. Well, in the instance of the Dean campaign, they had over 394 websites listed on their blog roll. So what did all this openness accomplish? So the web, and it's really not overstating the case to say that the web did create the Howard Dean for America candidacy. They received a lot of their donations and a lot of the information, and almost all of their supporters from the online world. It took a candidate who was a governor from an obscure state in the United States, which is Vermont, who had in January 2003 432 known supporters and only $157,000 in the bank to a real contender for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. The campaign raised over $50 million by over 300,000 individuals, and almost half of that, a little bit over half of that, was raised online. And I think also one could even say that most of the $50 million that was raised is in large part due to their online presence. At the height, they had over 640,000 supporters on their main mailing list that they were in contact with. They had over 189,000 participants in their monthly meetups. There was over 700 grassroots websites in support of the Dean for America candidacy, and over 1,000 Yahoo groups and listservs that were created in support of the candidacy. And as I mentioned before, there was over 35,000 blog commenters over the lifetime of the campaign. Now, sort of a take a step back, a sort of ROI, or return on investment look at what this online presence cost them and what it brought in for them. For about $1 million and about 25 people who were in the whole team, and not all of them were paid. I was on the team, Tom was on the team, neither of us, both of us were volunteers, and that's counted in that 25. They brought in approximately $28 to $30 million in online contributions, and that's out of the $50 million total. So they did something right, and this is obviously a very cost-effective way to get people into your campaign. What does this mean for the future? Not everything's bright and happy. So Kerry and Bush both had online presences in this election, but they never achieved an online movement. It seems to be that opening up the message and the campaign to bring in the talent of supporters appears to be the key to a successful online campaign. However, to take a step back, Howard Dean did not win the Democratic nomination for the presidency. So the online success has not yet been able to propel a candidate to voting success. So campaigns moving forward into the future need to look at these tools and look at the online organizing tools that are available and use them, assess the effort that they want to place into their online presences. And some of the people who were involved with the campaign have gone on now to create their own create their own consulting organizations. Two of the organizations that comprise most of the web team that did all the online efforts for the Howard Dean for President campaign are now in two independent consulting consulting firms. One is EchoDitto.com, who's comprised of Nico Mele, Harish, Michael Silberman, Jim Brayton, Garrett Graff, and Kerry Havrico, and BlueStateDigital.com, that was started by Yasha Franklin Hodge, who's the senior systems administrator at the Dean for America campaign, Clay Johnson, Joe Rosebars, who's a blogger, Ben Self, who did some database work, and Roy Neal, who's the campaign manager for the Howard Dean for President campaign. Thank you.
Are you taking questions yet?
I think we're going to do questions at the end.
Yep.
Okay. Hi. How's everybody doing? So now I'm going to talk about my story. Let's see if the audio works. So I quit a good job in the city where I was sort of working for the man. And I joined the Howard Dean campaign. I drove to Vermont and decided that my savings would last me for quite a number of months. Let's blow it on something that I believe in. But that happened in December of 2003. Let me back up a bit and tell you a little about what happened before that. If anyone here knows me, you know I'm a political guy. And in early 2003, every time I saw something about the 2004 presidential election, I just had this feeling, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And I remember the day where I turned to my partner and I said, I have a profound need to do something about this next election. And then in the spring of 2003, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. And it spread very quickly, and we knew that the prognosis wasn't good. And when he was in the hospital, I spent a lot of time with him, and he got a lot of visitors. And as time went on, the pain increased, he had trouble moving. But I distinctly remember the one time he just forgot about his pain and would be very animated was when the topic of politics would come up, because he was very upset about Bush's handling of the economy, civil rights. The Iraq war was starting, and he kept saying things like, how come no Democrats are standing up to this? How come Democrats are going along with what he's saying? And we had a lot of heart-to-heart talks, and at one point he turned to me and said, Tom, you really got to go out and find a fighter, someone who's going to stand up to Bush. Around the same time, I found this website called HowardDean.tv, which I later learned was using the TVtonic.com technology to trickle-feed video. What it does is it trickle-feeds video to your PC. You sort of leave it on during the day. When you get home from work, it's downloaded a couple new videos. And on the Howard Dean channel, you could see the speeches he was giving around the country, usually delayed by a day or two. And I saw this. In another part of a different speech that I saw, he made this point that we've recently lost a number of Democratic governors and senators because their campaign was, I voted with the president 85% of the time. And if you're a Democrat and your campaign is that you voted 85% of the time with the president, who's the most conservative person we've had in a lifetime, then of course people are going to go, going to say, let's vote for the guy that's going to vote with the president 100% of the time. And this really struck with me. So the final thing that made me really want to join the Dean campaign was I saw a video from the New York City meetup where it was just sort of the introduction that the guy had given at the meetup. And he said, said, welcome to the New York City meetup. If you're here to learn more about Howard Dean, turn to the person next to you and start talking, because this campaign is about you and me. And that really has a great open source feel to it. And I learned how true that was. So you might be wondering, how do you get a job in politics? Well, that's what I was wondering. Turns out, after making a couple phone calls, the way you get a job in politics is you start showing up and volunteering and hope that one day they hire you. That's why so many people on campaigns are students, because they don't have a job, so they're not losing anything. In December of 2003, I flew to Vermont for a weekend, took sort of a three-day working from week, and it was sort of my audition. It was obvious that their IT department had a lot of tasks and too few people, because that's sort of the definition of an IT department. But the people that I worked with were not many of the web team that Carrie talked about. I was with the IT team that was more core infrastructure. And they were great people. They are great people. I still stay in contact with them. But they were lacking in some technique. And if you know me, that's what the book's about. So for example, they mentioned that they had been debating for a long time about getting consensus on some security issues. Once the campaign, if it becomes the selected campaign, they're going to need to grow the network, and they're going to need a different security model, and they couldn't get consensus. So after listening to them for a while, I sort of drew this chart for them, which is like right out of the security chapter, and I said, okay, so this is the basics of the chart, and this is how you build a security policy. Fill this chart in, get management to buy into it, and then build your ACLs from here. Don't try to start with ACLs. And they were sort of like, hey, this guy's pretty good, or at least he's not, totally useless. So in January, I moved to Vermont. I guess the audition worked. Now, Vermont was having its coldest winter in like a billion years. So I decided, I'm going to be living like a college student, working 18-hour days for no pay, and you know what? I loved every minute of it. It was amazing. This picture is the house that I shared with a bunch of other people, and just, after we lost the Iowa primary, the for rent sign went back up. So the landlord really, really had his thumb on the politics of America. Here's a picture looking out the office window, just trying to point out that it was the coldest winter, and here I am, voluntarily there. Here's a picture of Garrett Graff, who's a press spokesperson, and Harish Rao, who is my boss. People often would ask me, what's it like on a political campaign? So I take pictures and email them home. I had my EyeSight camera and sometimes do little tours. This is what the office looked like. If you notice, everyone's looking up on a television. They had a rack of TiVos, and one of them, whatever was playing on TiVo number one, was also appearing on all these monitors all throughout the offices. And so the moment that Howard Dean came on, or some candidate was talking about Howard Dean, the people in the media group would put TiVo 1 on that channel, and just everything would stop, and we'd all watch Howard Dean. And it was also really funny when they were using a TiVo to try to transcribe exactly what was said, and you'd see some reporter saying, and then Howard Dean was, Dean was, Dean was, as they're trying to transcribe it. And yes, the campaign did stop every night to watch The Daily Show. And Wednesdays for West Wing. This is what one of our programmers looked like, standing next to me. So it was very, dot-com-y kind of atmosphere. We're in cubicles, but it's all self-styled with, funky chairs and stuff. Most of the programmers had Macs. When Dean did the MTV Rock the Vote presidential debate, probably the only debate where they asked real important questions, like they asked each candidate, tell me the truth, Mac or Windows. And Howard Dean said, it was funny which candidates didn't know. Howard Dean said, Windows. Oh, but my developers would kill me if I didn't say Mac. They're all on Mac. So really, what's it like to be on a presidential campaign? I have to tell you, it's the most amazing experience ever. It's sort of like, well, you've all seen The Matrix, right? Where none of this is real. There's actually a big machine that's sort of just driving this big virtual reality situation. Now, I'm not saying the world is actually like that. I'm not saying The Matrix is true. But once you work on a big campaign like this, you start to see how the media is this image that is projected against reality. And you watch as, you know, you realize that news often isn't news. It's reading a press release that a campaign sent. And you can watch someone creating, inventing news, inventing history. A press release gets written. It goes to the spokespeople. The spokespeople get on TV, and they're talking about it for the next couple days. And that's how campaigns work. It's really amazing and sort of scary. The other thing people would always ask me is, so how often do you meet Howard Dean? Well, the job of the IT team is to keep everything running in the office. The job of the candidate is to be nowhere near the office. Everyone in the office is going to vote for him. He doesn't need to be there. He needs to be on the road talking stump speech after stump speech. So really, it was a long while before I met Dean. He came home to see his son's soccer match and then stopped by the office for a half an hour, and then he was back on the road. Same thing with a lot of his high-level staff. I remember it was 4 weeks in, I think, before I met Joe Trippi. And I remember the moment I was walking down the hallway and he said, "Hey, guy," and kept walking. As if he knew me. Okay. So from a geek perspective, what is a campaign? Well, you got the real important people out on the road, always appearing on TV. But what's happening on a presidential campaign from the geek point of view? A campaign is just one giant database application. You got your supporters table and your voters table. Supporters are people that gave you money or have somehow contacted you. And voters are feeds from voter registration files. Everything is put into this database, and everything becomes a query. So as people are going door to door talking to people, they find out that someone at, you know, this house is very concerned with environmental issues. So the database is updated. That person likes environmental issues. You find another house, this person, strong supporter for the other candidate, and you mark that down in the database. So people are marked as 1 through 5s, and 1s are people that are strong supporters, and 5, you know, are not supporters. And then things become database queries. We need to send email to people concerned with the environment in New Jersey. We need to send email to anyone, because we have longitude and latitude data, we need to send email to anyone within, oh, I don't know, an hour's drive of this fundraising event. Or, let's see, or a whole bunch. Oh, so the campaign donation limit is $2,000. Once you've given that much, you can't give any more. So a lot of the queries began with, of the people who haven't maxed out yet, blah, 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 blah. You know, campaigns need a lot of money. That's how democracy works. And it was I was so proud to be on a campaign where that money was coming $20, $80 at a time from people that often we would get these letters where people saying, "I've never been involved in campaigns," or "I've never cared about politics, and I can't really afford to give you thousands of dollars, but here's $20 that I can give you this week. It's not a lot. I don't have health care, but I want to see you win." And we were getting those kind of donations instead of big, you know, corporate kind of, donors. Let's see. Carrie mentioned a lot of the external and internal application. I already mentioned the supporter database and the voter ID database. Just to let people know, for the network geeks in the house, who's the network geeks in the house? Okay, so very simple LAN, because at the headquarters are maybe 100 people, and what do they need? They need a LAN, file sharing, wireless. We used RT for our request tracking system, so if you had a problem with your PC, you could send email to help, and say, you know, hey, I can't send email. We had, someone got that, thank you. We were receiving about 7,000 emails a day. So who thinks they got a lot of email? 7,000 emails a day, and we were only processing about, I think, 20 or 30% of it when I arrived. Eventually, it became my project to solve this problem, and we were actually going to feed it all into RT, and that was going to go live like about a week after the campaign ended, so it never happened, but it would have been really fun. If you came early to this talk, you might have seen a slideshow that was playing. This was that when we had that poster creator where you could enter, you know, New Jersey for Dean needed posters, so they would type in New Jersey, hit submit, and get a PDF file that would be a poster they could use. We opened this up to anybody, and so people were doing, you know, Geeks for Dean and Left-Handed People for Dean, and we encouraged them to take pictures of themselves holding the signs. That was the slideshow we were showing earlier. TiVo. I can't tell you how important that was so that we knew what the media was saying about us. One TiVo for each major network. And the meetup organizing app, Carrie mentioned 1,200 meetups. Now imagine trying to do that without the internet. You'd probably need one staff person per state. So instead of 50 people organizing, you know, to get this goal of, you know, 1,200 meetups, one person, that's pretty amazing. Well, it was one person and a programmer. See, if you have a lot of money, you can just pay operatives in each state to run these things, and they're trained or trainable. But when you have volunteers, that have no real political experience, you have to sort of handhold them through things. So there was the conference call the day before. There was also a massive effort to get each one of these people the material they would need for a meetup. So if meetup.com's data feed told us that there'd be 100 people at this feed, they needed 100 copies of this, 100, you know, if this month's assignment was each person has to write two letters to people in Iowa asking them to vote for Howard Dean, if 100 people are expected to show up, you have to send 200 stamps, 100 copies of the instructions, et cetera, et cetera. So there was this program that was written that would generate the mailing labels for 1,200 packages that would be sent out. And it did some great tricks. So here's a picture of, this is probably a third of the packages going out. They would be, the printer would start going, we'd do the, you know, UPS delivers things to nearby states sooner than far away states. So the far away states we'd mail to them first, and so it would print out those states and slowly get closer and closer to Vermont. The label had a little coding system which meant how many of things were needed, and the software actually estimated how much that package should weigh and printed the right UPS coding gobbledygook so that UPS could bill us the right amount. And then a major volunteer effort to stuff 1,200 UPS packages, and they'd be tossed in the front office, and the UPS guys would come, and it would take them hours to lift them all away. This picture also demonstrates my inability to operate my digital camera because it looks like he's on the planet Xenon or something. So another just technology anecdote is there was an event, I believe this was at Cooper Union, but I'm not sure. Yeah, Cooper Union, a college in Manhattan, where the event was around this. We had a new Declaration of Independence for Americans, sort of a contract not with America kind of thing, and people signed it. And I'm told that like the day before, Joe Trippi said, you know, it would be cool if we did this on one of those new tablet PCs. So he sent someone out, and this was the first tablet PC used in a presidential campaign. This is the world's tallest FEC report. So once a month, you have to report information about every single contribution you get more than $200. And you submit it electronically in this obscure format, but you also have to submit it by paper. And now most campaigns, if they're getting, they try to get every donation right at that limit. 2,000, 2,000, 2,000, that's the most cost effective, right? Well, what changed things in this campaign was all these little contributions. So if we're getting all these $100 donations, our report was 20 times larger than, you know, other reports. So here's a neat picture of the guys proudly printing things out. And now, many of you have been in a situation where the users are complaining that the printer's not working. Well, our users were complaining, if this printer isn't fixed in time, the FEC fines us. This is gross, posting to the blog. So Wi-Fi was not as pervasive as it is today, and this picture is just from a year or so ago. Most campaigns eventually developed blogs, but it was really just echoing the, it was just copies of the press releases. And our blogs was actually had something to say, and were posted often from the road. So here we are at a campaign. You know, obviously, this is Bryant Park. So this is before I joined. Petajohn took this picture. They found a Wi-Fi hotspot, and they're posting to the blog. Now, we also had guest bloggers. We would get famous people like Tom Harkins. Okay, haha, I can name him. To post. Now, some sites did guest blogs, but yeah, it wasn't really written by the celebrity. You know, we made these people type it themselves. it's amazing what you learn about a candidate when you hand them a keyboard. We did get 7,000 emails a day at the peak. We also got a lot of paper mail. The better ones were posted on a wall, and it was just a delight to read them. So everyone always asks me, so why did the Dean campaign falter? I really think that fundamentally the problem is that before a single primary started, the media started saying, Dean's the front runner. With no, well, and maybe that was true, maybe it wasn't, but that's what they were saying. So the other eight candidates running all pointed their guns at the front runner. Now you had eight against one. And I think that's what really did it. Let's see. Why did Bush win? Well, that's for Bush to talk about. I do know that while the Democratic technology, you know, so I have no involvement in the Kerry campaign. This is purely speculation, but the Kerry campaign was very good at getting people to vote in densely populated areas, but the Bush campaign realized that it is the rural, not densely populated areas that were going to gather the votes. But who goes after those people? It's not densely populated. It's sparse. How could you reach all those people? Their technology was able to reach those people in ways that Kerry's campaign wasn't. Another question people often ask me is, how can I get involved? Well, join the movement, as you know, was the meme going on in the campaign. But in particular, obviously vote. But that's easy. That's an hour every 4 years, or hour a year, depending on your voting habits. Run for office. We need more geeks running for office. I mean, we complain to no end about these copyright laws and stuff, and oh, they don't understand. But why aren't we running? Why aren't we even just running for the local, your local political party committee, mayor, whatever? A lot of us live in towns with part-time mayors. When I was at Bell Labs, one of my users was the mayor of Maplewood, New Jersey. And he just had an arrangement with his boss that most of that work was at night, and occasionally there was a statue dedication that he had to take a couple hours for. We mostly have flex time. Why aren't we in politics? Also, your local party committees pick who runs. It's very low commitment, but they often pick who runs in your county or state for freeholder, governor, mayor. They hold a lot of power, and that's the way to take back a political party. Also, campaigns always need volunteers. You know, there was one campaign I volunteered for after the Dean campaign where I was just stuffing envelopes. But because I was a geek, I was able to, you know, improve the operational structure. And then one day they were designing a really bad poster for to hang up at schools to get kids they needed volunteers. And I said, well, let me help you touch that up. And my exciting Microsoft Word skills were put to good use in helping them make a better poster. You do a little thing like that, and it can go a long way. But you guys want the geek. What can I do? I know. So civicspacelabs.org develops software, open source code, that campaigns from a little mayor to presidential campaign can use to organize their campaign. It gives them a blog, voter ID database, mailing list, management and Exploder, that whole kind of thing. It's based on Drupal, which means it's PHP, but they need help. You know, they can always use more volunteers. And if you can't program, you can document. If you can't document, you can test. We're sysadmins. We can help them write a better install script because we know what's involved in installing things. Another project that needs programmers is blackboxvoting.org. They have this great site where you get an account and you can log in and get assignments and help them. Another really excellent project. The books that I'm encouraging people to read, is Trey in the room? Okay, so thanks, Trey. I stole these from your employer's website. That's why it says 30% off and look inside. but thanks to you, they have proper height and width. So if you want to know about, Joe Trippi wrote about his trials and tribulations on the campaign. That's in the book, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Howard Dean has a new book out called You Have the Power, which is about what you can do in your community to start a grassroots revolution. If you read one book this year, you're probably not at LISA. So if you read one book this year, Don't Think of an Elephant by George Lakoff. Brilliant strategy book about how the brain works and how to communicate clearly our political ideas. You should read this book if you're interested in politics or just interested in selling open source inside your company. And then finally, my favorite How to Design Posters That Don't Suck book, which is the Non-Designer's Design Book. The campaign didn't succeed, but I swear to you, my only regret is I didn't quit my job sooner and join up. It was the greatest experience I've ever had, and I recommend it to everybody. And so thank you very much. Well, now we have plenty of time for questions. Please use the mic.
Did you folks worry about saboteurs, provocateurs, or other kind of attacks coming via the volunteer base, via everything being open, and all these other organizations allowed to be loosely affiliated with the campaign?
Well, in fact, we did have to do a lot of damage control to a certain extent. We wanted everyone who is doing something positive for the campaign to be heard, but we also wanted to make sure that the doors were slightly barred so that people who were just saboteurs weren't actually getting on. One of the things we did eventually in the campaign was to, on the blog, there were trolls. There were lots of people who would post completely random stuff onto the blog. And we tried everything. We tried banning IPs. And then one time we had a fairly coordinated attack, but I would assume it's a script kiddie or something, a kid with a script or something, where the person who was launching the attack was rotating IPs and changing his or her information that was being placed on the blog, so we couldn't really get at it at that point. And at that point, we actually ended up instituting comment registration for the blog. But for most of the time that we were running the campaign, we didn't have to take drastic actions to be able to keep people away. this campaign was about inviting people in, and people seemed to respect that, and people seemed to understand what we were doing and not to just screw with us for the sake of screwing with us most of the time.
I was wondering, you mentioned blackboxvoting.org. There seems to be a controversy. What's blackboxvoting.com? Are they related? What happened there?
Or quite possibly, that's a typo on the slide.
No. They're two different
sites. I hope I put the right one up. Okay, that, .org is the right one.
That's Bev Harris, but I was wondering if somebody could explain what happened. Anybody knows why there are two?
No.
Oops, sorry. Okay, so one is really a PR site for a book about the Diebold voting machines, and one is people trying to change politics.
This is a comment on some things that Carrie said, not a question. There's a wonderful book, forgive me, I don't remember the author, called Bowling Alone, about the tremendous decline in organizational and community participation in the United States over the last few generations, pages of statistics and anecdotes and reasons for this, as well as lots of reasons why this is a very, very bad thing. And one of the side points that came up in this book was that currently there are lots of organizations now that get tremendous amounts of money and donations, but that are not really about community participation. For example, the Audubon Society gets millions and millions of dollars from people, but what that is people writing a check, sending it to a Washington-based national organization, which is not the same thing as meeting once a month to watch birds.
Right.
And again, this is, in some ways, the author and I consider this a very, very bad thing. When we're talking about the nature of the campaign and the way the organizations worked and what happened to it, all I kept thinking was, all right, this is a model for bringing organization, interaction, human one-on-one contact back to people, a kind of involvement that I think tragically we've lost a great deal. So I think irrelevant of politics, I think that's just an amazing and wonderful thing.
Absolutely. If you really want to change the world, knock on your neighbor's door and introduce yourself. Mm-hmm. How many people know their next-door neighbors? Wow, that's about half. Have a coffee clutch and put a piece of paper and all your neighbors, you know, go around the block and invite everyone and say, hey, I don't know my neighbors, and that's killing this world. Let's just chat. Let's, you know, watch TV together. I don't care. Just get to know your friends. I mean, your local people.
And I think that really, as the commenter made the point so eloquently, I think that is what the Dean campaign was fundamentally about. They used the internet, but the fundamental concept was connecting people one by one by one by one. It wasn't this concept of, well, we have this mass email list, we have a million people on the email list, so let's just blast people with emails, you know, every 3 days and hope that our fundraising goals and that our supporters our goals are met. It wasn't about that. It was about being on the ground every day, trying to connect people, usually via the internet, and getting people to connect from a hand-to-hand basis on the ground. And I think that was the brilliant strategy, and I only wish that he would have become the Democratic nominee, because I think it would have been an amazing campaign. But we'll see what happens next time.
And I have confidence that this technology is going to improve, and there will be a person elected by using this technology. And I'm confident in that because I used GCC1. And it was great, but, you know, it was GCC1. And 2 was a lot better. And, you know, it took a long time for it to be accepted and as popular, well, more effective than the commercial equivalents. But it happened because people kept working at it. And that's the nature of an open source project. Ryan?
So, Tom, I'm sleep deprived, but I do want to say thank you. At the Lisa 03, you started a BOF, which got a lot of people doing very many different things. It was the first time I'd heard about meetups and things like that, and you did touch a lot of people. I know it was very depressing talking to you this time based on what happened. But, I mean, I got involved in local land use issues, et cetera, and for the first time had a couple of, you know, posters out in my front door and getting involved, you know. So I think locally, and I think that's the message that should be driven more. You sure make a bigger impact locally than anything else. So thank you for educating me last year.
Well, no, thank you for getting involved. Greg?
So I can show you how to take away those badges or something. I can even show you how to change them to 99% off, though you won't actually get that price on the site.
I just want to know how I can up my ranking on Amazon.
If you buy about 10,000 copies of your book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I read an article about the Carrie Edwards IT department, and one of the things that fascinated me was the motorcade, I'm not sure if it was the motorcade or the bus tour that was going around, how they had a wiring closet, if you want to think of that, which was a Suburban with a satellite dish on top of it, and it was wirelessly connected to all the buses and cars in the campaign. Did the Dean campaign have anything like that?
We had a bus to go around Iowa. In terms of the specific connectivity that was offered on the bus, I actually don't know. I would actually assume that they probably didn't have connectivity up on the bus. They stayed in hotels and they had connectivity pretty much everywhere. This is the middle of 2003, late 2003, so Wi-Fi was not as saturated as it is at this point, but it still was not, you know, one in a million shot. You could pretty much expect that you would be able to get online, with reasonable accuracy in even rural areas somewhere.
Yeah, apparently both Carrie and Edwards were compulsive web surfers while traveling. That was
yeah. Don't link and drive.
Other questions?
Can you flip back one screen, Tom? There were some. One more. The one with the web pages on it. With the
the URLs?
URLs, there we go.
Oops, sorry.
Back up. There you go. That's it. Thanks.
The answer to that question is yes.
Would you do it again? Do you plan to do it again? And did you learn something that you'll do differently next time?
Well, I didn't talk about my experience, but I got to say that, yeah, I mean, it was one of the most empowering events of my life. Absolutely. I mean, it was just without parallel. Would I do it again? In a heartbeat. If you had asked me 2 weeks after we failed and that we didn't make it in Iowa and after the campaign shut down, I would have given you a slightly different view. I was completely burnt out at that point, as I think most of the people who were involved in the campaign were. But the chance for me in particular, I've been involved in online community organizing since, 1997 and, have sort of made that my main focus. So to be able to, open source initiatives and different open source projects, to see these, this concept of the open source ideology being put into national politics, just the chance to do that and to see that happen, for me was worth all the effort, all the 18-hour days, all the 24-hour days that I put in. Just using the open source ideology to run a political campaign, I just thought was an idea that I had thought of and that I thought would be great about 5 years ago. And I just thought it was amazing to see it actually being done in a national political campaign. I definitely hope that it gets done in the same way and even better in the future. And as soon as a campaign opens up that starts doing it this way, I'll be right there helping them out and helping them to do whatever they possibly can to get elected. I think it was great.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be doing it again because you asked what we learned. Well, what I learned is that you don't know what you're doing the first time you do something. And so now I'm like ready to do it for real next time, and I want to have that experience. I forgot to mention, I said that I just showed up at the door and started volunteering, hoping that I'd be hired. I did, in a way, finally get hired. My boss came to me on the morning that we all knew Dean was going to announce he was leaving the race, and he said, well, the bad news is, as you know, the campaign's over. The good news is, I finally got permission to hire you. And I said, explain more. He said, well, we'll pay you $1,000 if you stay to shut down the network for a week. And I said, okay, well, you know, I always ask this when I get a job offer. Where do you see me in 5 years?
So, what did he say?
He said, you'll be running for president. One more? Well, thank you very much.